To better your best and your world, you need to dig deep and grow. Join us as top experts, leaders, and creators uncover powerful insights to help you grow in life and in work. And now, your host, Michael McAvoy. Welcome, everybody, to this episode of Dig Deep Grow. My name is Michael McAvoy. I'm your host. And today, we're going to be talking about business startups with Frank Gruber. He's got a new book just released called Startup Mixology, Tech Cocktails Guide to Building and Growing Growing and Celebrating Startup Success. Now, Frank's newcomer to this to the tech industry as well as both corporate and entrepreneurial life. I'm going to let Frank explain a little about his background. That's going to be the first thing we cover. So, Frank, without ado, thanks for joining me.
Oh, thanks so much, Michael. Really appreciate it. So a little bit about me. I started my career thinking I was going to be a baseball player. And that didn't work out, so I played some in college and decided that I needed to pick a career choice. And so I decided to jump into computer technology and science and started hacking, learned how to code, and ended up working at Tribune and building systems for them and got into product development. Was always curious, just really curious about what I could do with it. And it was good timing, the boom was happening, and then there was the bust there. And long story short, I went to a conference, got it really... got excited about some blogging platforms that I thought could help better the Tribune and some of the things that they were doing, and started a blog. Started a blog called Somewhat Frank, and it was right around 2005. It was the beginning of kind of the Web 2.0 boom and social movement online, and just got hooked. Got people listened, and it was before there was Twitter and Facebook and all these other options, and so I started connecting with people about and covering the scene and. Was obsessed with it. For about 5 years, I wrote every single day. And in the process, I also started something called Tech Cocktail, which is, started as a simple mixer-style event and gathering that then turned into a media company. And I've been running Tech Cocktail since 2006, first as a passion project, and then full-time since 2010. And when I was doing it as a passion project, I worked at Tribune, and I also then went over to AOL and did a lot of product development for some of the social products like AIM and launch products for millions of people and got a lot of experience in how to build product and as well as their content and stuff that they do and blogging and social started to really pick up and Tech Cocktail continued to grow. And finally I had to decide, do I continue to do the corporate route or do I jump off this diving board and take this on? And decided to go with Tech Cocktail full time, and we've been running full steam ahead since. So it's been a lot of fun and really exciting, and finally got a chance to write a book and share some of the stuff that I've learned over the last decade.
Right. You and I have a similar past with corporate life, and in fact, around the same exact time that you were let go from your first corporate job was the same time I did. So, being thrust into the entrepreneurial community is sometimes just you're forced into it. And I wanted you to speak to a little about the current state of affairs with young folks, men and women coming out of college. They face some obstacles in corporate life that no other generation really did. So talk a little about what you've learned by working with young men and women and what advice you could give to them about entrepreneurial life versus corporate life. And
I came up in a time when it was literally you go to school, you get a good job, and you work for a company for 30 years and build a career. Mm-hmm. And that was the, what was kind of ingrained in me from day one, and go to school, and you're going to be safe, and you're going to have a good job, and it's going to pay the bills and everything. And 2001, ended up getting laid off from one of my first jobs, and it taught me a lesson, that no one's really going to look out for you, and you need to start figuring it out on your own and figure out where you need to, what you want to do with your life and you're passionate about. So I ended up not jumping, into anything startup related right away, but ended up going in, back into another safe environment. But what you're finding today is that those safe environments that are thought to be safe environments were not aren't as available to people right out of school. There's a lot of people looking for jobs these days. And I feel like, one of the reasons that I even, I wrote this book, Startup Mixology, was to better help jumpstart some of those folks that are kind of stuck, trying to figure out what to do. you know, giving them a guide for the things that took me, you know, a decade to figure out on my own. Mm-hmm. I wanted them to be able to take this book and jumpstart into that and have a good foundation as to what to do. And, you know, the book also references other places to look to get, you know, additional knowledge. So I want it to be a starting point for people as they try to figure it out and try to blaze their own path, because I think you're seeing a lot more people come out of school not know what they need to do or want to do, and they're going to have to figure it out and maybe do something on their own because there just aren't as many opportunities.
What would you actually, I mean, let's just pretend you, I don't know if you do, but let's pretend you have a son who's, you know, in his third or fourth year of college. What advice would you give your son?
Yeah, I don't have a son in college. I do have puppies.
Okay.
maybe someday I'll have a son here soon, but we'll see. Right now I'm working on a startup, you know, in Tech Cocktail and trying to manage two little puppies, which actually feels a lot like having two kids because you have to train them in similar ways. Anyway, so what advice I would give is that, you know, obviously you can go the safe route, but coming out of school is a great time to kind of – you're at the best point of your life as far as your commitments. It's the lowest – like you're used to like sleeping on couches and being really lean. Mm-hmm. And so your level of your ability to be able to be flexible is a little bit higher. And you know, the longer you're out of school, the more commitments you lock yourself into. You end up buying a new car, and you buy a condo, and you get locked into all these different things. And probably in some cases, you're still paying off your college commitments and bills. And so, you know, bottom line is you can live on the least when you come out of school, most likely, right? Like you're at the lowest, you know, level, and you can kind of, that's an opportunity. A lot of people say, oh, shoot, I want to go out and now start paying this stuff off. But you're still in an opportunity where you can start your own thing and bootstrap for a while and get something going. And there's a lot of different opportunities in like accelerators. And if you have ideas, there's places to go to kind of take those ideas and turn them into something. And with a little bit of seed funding, you can survive on literally, you know, ramen and you know, the passion of what you're trying to do. So I think it's the best time, I think, to start up. And I think there's a lot of opportunities for companies or people that want to do that.
Yeah. You know, having 40 years ahead of you is always a good, it's a good thing when you want to take some risks.
You know what? It's that thing where you really don't learn until you do it, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you can talk about it all you want, but the minute you dive in and you start figuring it out yourself, you come across the problems that you might not be able to think about ahead, and you figure it out. I mean, it's simple trial and error at a certain point, but and the ones that you make mistakes on are the ones that you remember, right? Like if you're not making mistakes, you're not learning anything. You're just, I mean, obviously it's not great to make mistakes, but those are opportunities to continue to learn as you go. And I've made a lot of mistakes, and some are in the book.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll share a couple of those today. Yeah. But let's move toward the book now. First, I'll ask. This is your first book. So why don't you say a little about your experience with regards to, hey, you know, what was it like? Was it a surprise when you finally got into the process, or is it what you expected?
Yeah, so I've been, you know, it's kind of a life dream to kind of write a book. My parents, I got four parents, lucky to have four parents, and they all are really supportive. And three out of four are English professors at some level, right? So because of that, as a kid, I was, you know, oftentimes had to write a lot, and they, you know, at a certain point they're like, you need to write a journal entry in like a paper journal every single day, like write a page before we let you go out and play. And at the time it was like, oh shoot, you know, as a kid you don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. But hindsight, I'm thankful because it put me in a position where I could write. I knew how to write. I learned how to write by, you know, repetition. Mm-hmm. And you know, it wasn't like I was writing anything crazy. It's just like almost like a morning pages kind of brain dump of things that I was up to. And it's funny, if you fast forward, that is actually in some cases what a personal blog is, right? So I was doing it on paper, you know, back in the day, and it's turned into a passion of mine later. And then, you know, that ability to be able to do that had turned into, well, I'd love to write, you know, books someday. And, you know, back in the day, I did comic books with my brother, and I used to do comic books. And then we started writing other types of books. And then ultimately, yeah, it's always been on my bucket list to do. So the process, though, you know, it took me about 8 years to get the book deal that I wanted to do. And so, you know, it started out with I was doing some other books about Web 2.0, and, you know, those didn't come to fruition. Wasn't the right timing. And then this book, I pitched an idea similar to it, you know, 4 years ago to the same publisher, and it didn't work out. It wasn't the right time. It wasn't the right formula for what the book should be. And then finally, they came back to me, actually, about a year and a half ago, and said, hey, why do we not have a book with you yet? And I was like, oh, I don't know. I've been talking to you for a while. So So we decided, like, let's figure it out. So I pulled the old pitch that I had a few years back and redid it in a way that made a lot more sense to me and I was really more passionate about. And so the process, though, once that happened, I mean, that's, you know, I got the deal in August last year, you know, started, you know, thinking about it, but didn't really take action because of the regular day-to-day of what we do. Like, our company is a media company and we, you know, a publication and we do a lot of content. We do a lot of events around the country and I was part of a lot of those events and I do a lot of business development. We're still a startup of 13, so I wear a lot of hats. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, I couldn't drop everything and just start writing a book. And so we had our big, you know, tour that leads up to this big conference. We circle the globe trying to find the hottest companies and they come together at this Celebrate conference in October in Vegas. And so I basically could not really focus on writing the book until after that happened, the end of October. And then a month later, I was getting married. So I started it and then got married took a week off to get married kind of thing. And then there was the holidays. And then, so I was doing it, you know, very much nights and weekends amongst all these huge life events. And then, you know, so it was a really interesting time because I was doing all these other things too. But somehow I figured I had, you know, some help from some of our teammates to help organize behind the scenes. But it was really hard. It was the hardest thing I think I've ever done because of the timeline. It was due in January 17th, which was literally the day before we went on supposed to go on my honeymoon. And unfortunately, I missed the date. I didn't make that date. Uh-huh. I couldn't. It was just too much. Between, you know, November and January, it's not a long window to write a 50,000 word book. But long story short, I ended up writing a 100,000 word book in just an additional month. I finished in February. And I ended up, you know, some of the times on the honeymoon when it was raining in Kauai, I spent some time writing, which thankfully my wife, you know, was very supportive of. And she's obviously been really supportive of the whole system setup and actually helped a lot with the book, you know, making sure that I'm telling good stories and actually make coherent sentences.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, that's you kind of slammed it in there, but
yeah. Well, it's like one of those things that was. I felt like, you know, opportunities come and they come and go, and if you don't sometimes take opportunities that push yourself, they may not come back around. You know, and yeah, you know, that could have been another opportunity down the road at a different time and would have had more time, but there's never a great time. You know, mm-hmm. Like, yeah. There's always going to be another thing that's in the way to actually doing this right away.
Yep.
And so I felt like, well, just let's figure it out. Let's do it and figure it out. And that's what we did. And we were able to push. I think hindsight, if I ever did it again, I'd ask for a lot more time.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think you need to kind of go off and do it. Thankfully we were able to get it done and make it happen, but it was a lot of hard work and a lot of nights and weekends. And I just remember the last day that it was the day before it was due, the final edit or whatever. I wanted to make sure that I read everything because we had to cut from 100,000 we ended up doing 60,000 words. I negotiated up an extra 10,000 words.
Mm-hmm.
It was supposed to be 50,000. Anyway, I wanted to make sure because after you cut all that stuff, you don't remember what's actually in the book anymore because you had cut so much.
Right.
Chapters, right? So there's missing chapters that we're actually giving out online if they buy through us on tech.co/book or startupmixology.tech.co. And so got all this extra content. We've been putting out blog posts about some of the extra content. Anyway, I read the whole book. My wife and I stayed up. We worked a full day, 7 o'clock. It was due the next afternoon. So I stayed up from like 7 until we stayed until 2 in the morning, read the entire book from cover to cover. And just to make sure that we found every, you know, just to make sure we didn't find any edit issues, like didn't make sense because things got cut and now they're referencing things that aren't in there.
Yep.
So it was super coherent. And that I just will never forget that. I was literally by the end of it, 2 a.m, you've already read this book a million times and you're like, you're just exhausted and trying to stay up to read that final chapter. And thankfully we did because we found one major issue at the last page, last chapter, last sentence, like wasn't right. And we were able to pull. I wish I would have read that first, but but we ended up finding it, fixing it, and then submitting it. So
fantastic. Get this podcast delivered to you automatically. You can subscribe via iTunes, Stitcher, and more. You'll find the links here or on our website, digdeepgrow.com. In telling that story, you actually pointed to one of the topics in your book. The whole idea of action versus thinking, thinking about things, you know, there's two different types of entrepreneurs, as you mentioned.
Yep.
Talk a little about that, you know, and what a difference that makes when you approach it that way.
Well, yeah, I think there's folks that that are really cerebral and that they think about ideas a lot. And I'm more of the regard of like, let's just jump in and figure it out and assemble the parachute on the way. And so I think that's just how I am. But there's definitely a lot more folks that are, they try to really overthink it and make sure that they understand it. And they you know, some that do that work, it works out, right? They're really intelligent about what they're doing and whatnot. But I'm more of the, hey, let's figure out what we're passionate about, what problem we're trying to solve, and then figure out, because you're not going to actually be able to figure every little detail out ahead of time. And when you do, it can be crippling, right? Mm-hmm. So it can actually hinder your business if you're like, oh, I got to get everything perfect, you know, beforehand, because you're gonna launch, you're gonna learn, and that's part of it. So I think the key is like figuring out what you're trying to do, start something really small, get something small out there in the world, and see how people react, see how people use it, and then adjust. And I think that's the more of the approach that I would take in just in general as being an entrepreneur. There's different, you know, different thought processes with different types of entrepreneurs. Some like to be a little bit more secretive, even, that they don't want to share, you know, they want to get it perfect and then launch this amazing thing. And, you know, you're finding more and more people are starting with the early state, you know, like, let's get something out there. And in some cases, they are just coming up and doing like a, almost like a Kickstarter launch with like just an idea.
Yes,
right? They don't even have a product. Like,
yep.
Beta Brand is a great example. They build clothing. And they don't actually even build it until they put it out there in the world, like the disco jacket or the executive hoodie, right? They launch the idea, make one, and say, how many people want to buy this? And then they figure that out, and then they go make it. So it's, I mean, instead of like overthinking, like I've got to get 150 of these made immediately because I know I'm going to sell it and I've got to put all this capital and risk into it and everything else, there's an ability to like launch things in the world today and not have to worry about that until you get a response.
Yeah, I think you also mentioned in the book about that you can lower risk by by doing the entrepreneur or that mindset can approach things from a risk averse, even though they're taking risks, they're not spending the wad, if you know what I mean.
Right. Yeah, that's totally exactly right. And you see a lot of different types of people right in the world and how they handle risk. And even my risk tolerance has gone up from doing this. I think that was the biggest thing with even starting a company is like you got to be really comfortable with it. And I did a lot of passion project side things for a long time. And just because I wasn't, partly because of financially, like I went to Purdue and Northwestern and I had some financial stuff I had to take care of and, you know, just wasn't comfortable with, I should have jumped into starting up right away and then I might, like I said it earlier, like I would think I would have been more comfortable with, I don't want to say slumming it, but being that, living the college lifestyle a little bit more, you know, where you're more used to like sleeping on a floor or something or whatever, you know, like being a little bit more lean.
Mm-hmm.
But once you start locking in like car payments and loans and you've got the condo and your lifestyle is set in a certain way, it's hard to get out of that.
Yeah. Why don't you run through a few of the, you know, the main points that, as you mentioned, over a decade, you've learned, and just contrast it a little bit with what maybe some traditional startup wisdom has been and, you know, the things that you personally may have found to be different.
Yeah. I can go through. I mean, just in general, like getting started, you know, we interact with a lot of entrepreneurs around the country, and a lot of them have ideas. And you know, they figure out later like what's the next step. And it's like figuring out how you're going to bring this to life and taking action. But then you know, one of the things that was really a lesson learned there was like, you know, you've got to figure out your team, right? Find who your co-founders are going to be, and be okay with like going to war with them and you know, up and downs and everything else for a while, because this is like not a 2-year thing. This is not a 1-year thing. And in many cases, if you're super passionate about it, it's probably going to be a 5 to 7 year thing. Mm-hmm. And you got to be okay with that. Like being okay with doing the same thing or working with the same people for that amount of time. And, you know, a lot of companies, they fall apart in that they pick the wrong people or, you know, they're not super passionate about it. So figure that out. And then once you have that, you got to formalize a little bit. And it's always, you know, I hate the fact that you have to kind of lawyer up a little bit, which, you know, get your paperwork together so that you can move ahead. Because if you don't, down the road, when you grow and you have revenue and whatever, it's really hard to fix all that stuff. And it can actually cost you a lot of money.
So
you know, getting stuff like that in order early is important. And so accountants and lawyers are, you know, those are important to get those folks that are going to be on your side to kind of formalize what you're doing and make sure that everything's above board before you try to, you know, build it out. Because if you don't get it right with your co-founders and stuff, and get in an agreement, things change over time, and maybe they don't want to have the same agreement that you talked about, you know, once you've built it, right? Maybe they want to change it, and now you've got a problem. So get it all on the same page and out there first, and then go build.
What would you say to the entrepreneurs that you know they've got an idea, right? And mm-hmm. and they're already talking about an exit strategy.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a bad thing to think through the path. I don't want to say strategy like that is a bad thing. I don't think it's the best way to start. You definitely want to think about where you want to go and what you want to be as a vision. Mm-hmm. But you know, building the exit is not always the best option, right? Like I'd rather see startup founders be passionate about an idea so much to actually bring something amazing into the world versus looking for an exit and filling up their pocketbook, right? So I think that's the difference, and because at the end of the day, that'll come out, and it's not going to work, right? And it's people can see through that, and yep. So there have been some successful companies that way, but it's not the best, in my opinion, the best way to do it.
Okay, so that's the startup phase. Talk a little about. Once you've got some people together, what are the pitfalls that you want to avoid as you're growing?
Yeah, so I think team is super important. Who's in your army? Who have you recruited to be a part of this amazing thing? And as you add new people, it's going to change the dynamic of the company. And culture is really important. And it's something that has become a hot topic these days. But in the early stages, it's something that a lot of people forget about. Because it's just the founders and they're like, oh, we don't need to worry about that right now. But everything you do is in influencing this culture, and culture is what ends up really making your company, right? Like your brand and building who you are. And so, coming up with those core values and what you stand for can be an amazing thing to do early on, because ultimately it turns into your rules of the road or whatever. So, if you were to drive a car in a new place, like on a different planet or something, right? You want to make those rules of the road so people know you're supposed to drive on the right side and everything. Otherwise, you just got total chaos and nothing to point back to when, your company falls, astray or somebody decides to just drive all over the planet. So, I mean, that's kind of a weird analogy, but the idea is if you have those, you can point back to if somebody doesn't do something in line with your core mission or values, you can point back and you don't have to it's not like you're being the bad cop. You're just like, listen, man, or look at this. Like, you're not following, what we're about, and it's hurting our company, mm-hmm. So I think that's a really important thing. It helps everyone kind of as a guide. And our core values are actually in the book. And obviously we moved our company to downtown Las Vegas, and we look out at Zappos, which, Tony Hsieh, the CEO of Zappos, wrote the foreword, and he's doing the downtown project here. Mm-hmm. And, he's, big on culture, and his company, is, that they ooze culture, and their core values are in the book too. And I feel like it's one of those things that's becoming more of a hot topic as companies realize that people are what run companies and culture is what keeps it going. So that's, I think, really important as you continue to build that team out, because that's who's going to, make that or break your company.
Right. And it would be fair to say that the passion that you start up with and the culture have to go hand in hand.
Oh, most definitely. I mean, if you've got your – and there's different times, right? Timing is different for different – like you may find amazing people that could help you – really early that end up, outgrow them because they were like stem cells that could do everything. And now all of a sudden you're at a stage where you need specialist type people and you don't want to hire specialists when you're not ready. Cause now you've got like these ringer type people that are maybe they're salespeople or marketing people that you're not at the right stage for that. So it's this whole like team matching thing that makes or breaks a lot of companies and their culture. And if you end up with somebody that's a specialist, they may not want to get their hands dirty in something else, and then you've got a problem because you only have, let's say, a dozen people, and you need to really all jump in and be ready to do it. So, but as you grow and you have hundreds of people, then you can specialize, and that's when you get a chance to have those people that are just really good at one thing and just execute. So it's timing and figuring that out where you're at along the growth side, and then scaling as you do. So, but those are super important lessons that you can learn. And there's some folks that are in the book that talk about that scaling and how to build a successful startup and into a bigger business. And at a certain point, I wouldn't consider you a startup anymore.
Yeah, you cover numerous different areas, but and the two that you've highlighted, I think probably are the most important. But talk a little about the some of the other intricacies or finer points that people should be looking at.
Yeah, so I think, one of the things that I think is really interesting, we can talk about sales and marketing and bootstrapping, how to get funding, and that's all in here. And, and relationships is super important, and metrics, having metrics that teach you how to, as a guide, right? Like, you need to figure out what success looks like and what's that mean to you, and it's different for every company. But the thing that runs across all these elements is there's two things. So you know, there's things that people need to understand that are going to happen, like the harsh realities of what's going to happen, that you need to kind of be ready for. There's a lot of glamorization today about, you know, companies and being, you know, I'm the next billionaire or whatever. But, you know, in a lot of cases, you hear about the seventh to ninth year of that company and not the first seven, mm-hmm. which were horrible. We're like a roller coaster, and you don't hear about that because that's not what people want to hear about. They want to hear about success, right? So, we, you know, in the book, I try to shine a light on the fact that you're going to have harsh, hard times, and it's going to be an up and down roller coaster every single day. And you need to be ready for that. In a lot of cases, folks may not be, because it's been glamorized, and we've seen people actually take it to the extreme and attach their company to themselves. And that's when it goes really bad, right? You've seen some suicides, you've seen other things that are not pretty. And I want people to be ready for that and understand that that's, you know, the startup is not, you know, you're an individual and you're building a thing together, and you know, and be ready for the harsh realities. And the way that you can get out of that, and the other part that I want to talk about, is through what I call celebration. And it's not just clinking glasses, even though, you know, we are Tech Cocktail and we do like to have some fun. It's not about that. It's about building motivational events, things that can help propel you. So celebratory events as a motivational tool is kind of the way that I put it. And you can do that in every single element. On the sales side, you know, you can install a sales bell, and it's crazy what a little thing like that could do to your sales team as far as motivation. And when you've actually sold something, ring that bell. I mean, everyone on the team is going to see that and realize, wow, we're making progress. Helps morale, helps the person that's selling, makes them feel good. And then also, who doesn't want to ring a freaking sales bell, right? I would love to, if I don't sell stuff, right?
Right, so
you're
exactly.
You're going to all pitch in, because that's how you build a company, and everyone's got to feel, you know, in and part of it. And so that's just one example, but you can do other things like that as you continue to go, and you're going to hit those slumps and you want to push through. And so creating these events, almost like as a person, like you sometimes, you know, you put those like carrots out there, like, oh, we get through all this, I'm going to go on vacation to blah, 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 and take a break, right? Well, similar with celebration, right? Think about that as like your carrot. Like, where are you going to present those so that your team and you continue to pull out and push ahead?
Yeah. One word that was omitted from the, you know, your last answer there was money. Because money isn't the motivator that a lot of people think it is.
No, it isn't, right? And we do talk about money. It's part, you know, part five of the book. There's a chapter on funding and bootstrapping, and we bootstrapped for 7 years, and it was really hard. And, you know, for 3.5 of it was passion project, and, you know, the last couple were part of, you know, basically, you know, us hustling our butts off. And there were times we couldn't pay our rent. We had to really downsize what our lifestyle was like. And just, you know, hustle our brains off to get us going. At a certain point, you know, there were points where we had to pull out credit cards and pull out, you know, personal savings to the point where we had to, like, keep things going. And once you start bringing on employees in your bootstrap, that's when it gets scary. And I'm thankful for the ability to my partner and I were able to get through that, but also the employees that we were able to pull on, you know, they believed in us to the point where, you know, hey, we're a couple days late to pay you, but we'll get it to you. Do not worry. We're waiting on this payment from this company or whatever. I have a lot of respect for the folks that joined us early, and I'm sure there's companies all over the country that have that same story. So that's important. And then once you actually get to the point where you do take funding, and it's not the right answer for everyone, you got a cash flow positive business, which we did, but it was one of the things we wanted to continue to accelerate. You know, every situation is a little different, but then it changes the game a little bit, and you've got a little bit of a group of people you're working with that's part of your company. And but again, you still got to be lean, right? You know, you raise a couple $1 million or whatever, it's still, you didn't win the lottery.
Exactly.
So that's when the work actually starts.
Exactly. Yeah. So I want to ask you about investing in startups in just a moment. But
yeah.
As you were sitting down and writing the book, who did you see as the ideal reader, the person who, you know, you were really trying to help with the book?
Yeah. So it's basically, anybody with an idea. We get a lot, you know, I meet a lot of entrepreneurial-minded people. People are working at big companies that have ideas. Everyone has ideas, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to be able to take that and say, okay, you have an idea that you wanted to do someday, but maybe you can do it now and start kind of building that out. It doesn't have to be full-time. You can start as a passion project. A lot of things do. But hopefully this guides you and leads you in the right direction, because there wasn't a book like this when I started. I had to, like, read a lot of different books, and there's some great ones out there. But there was nothing that was comprehensive that was able to kind of walk me through the different things and talk about some of the people that are involved. So I'm getting an education not just on, like, how to do it, but also some of the key players, and there's a lot that aren't in the book that are key players too, because I couldn't literally make a directory of key players, but you know, and organizations. But it hopefully will help people guide themselves through the, you know, the ins and outs of the industry, mm-hmm. and will help bring them to a level that they can actually, you know, jump in and start something. I mean, so it's those people that are sitting on the sidelines thinking about it. There's also people that are in it right now that they can learn some of the lessons from these other companies. And then there's people that are in organizations, like big companies. I worked in a corporate environment for a long time. Trying to innovate in a company is freaking really hard. And so even launching products is hard. It takes a couple years sometimes, and where I was to launch a new product or idea. Mm-hmm. And so being able to take some of the lessons from these startups and take that, you know, fast moving kind of process and apply it to your internal stuff as an entrepreneur could be really helpful. So I'm literally, it's a little bit of a gamut, but it runs a gamut, but it's, you know, people that have ideas that want to try to birth them, and they can do it both as a new company or internally.
Yeah. Now, there's probably one or two sections in the book where you could say, you know, I wish somebody else had written this, you know. I never found that. I had to learn that myself. Mm-hmm. What's one idea in the book that's like that?
Yeah, I mean, the formation chapters, I mean, I learned a lot about, you know, just doing it. You realize that the important part of the paperwork side, even though it's like, for me, it's like the most boring. Like, and for most people, right? Like, I'm not a huge accountant fan, like, but it's so important. Like, and so I learned a lot in that regard. And then also just picking co-founders, and I made some decisions early on with some other companies that I started, and you know, the company's not around anymore, partly because of that. The ideas were good, but the, you know, it's not always about the idea; it's about the team, and the people, and the execution. And so, I think I'd pinpoint that. And then there's just a lot of really great lessons in the harsh realities, and some of the celebratory things that people do at their companies. You know, there were good ideas that could be applied to your company immediately,
right,
to kind of keep people motivated.
So you've done some investing in startups as well? Is that right?
Yeah, a little bit. Unfortunately, I don't have as much time to do that as I'd like, and a lot of my money and time is focused on building this company. So try not to divert too much, but I've invested in Paul Singh's company, Dashboard.io, mm-hmm. and I'm also advisors for Umba, which is, you know, obviously I have some points there. I'm part of a group called the Next Gen Angels, which is a angel investment group out in D.C., and they're really active. They fund a company a month at least. Mm-hmm. I haven't been able to jump into as many lately just because of time. I just haven't had a chance to vet companies. And we get a lot of, you know, we see a lot of deals too. But I also just, you know, it's not totally out there yet, but it's in the book, obviously, that I'm part of this fund in D.C. called the Crystal Tech Fund, which is out of Crystal City. And it's led by Paul Singh, who I mentioned I've invested in his company. So that company manages. So been involved, continue to be. I'll probably, you know, in the future be more involved, but it's hard to run a company and be an investor at the same time, you know.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things that, you know, might be jumping in and doing more stuff later on in my life, but right now I'm trying to really build Tech Octo and continue to execute on a mission of getting helping, you know, startup founders and better tell the story in these different places all across the country and soon to be world. And that's been my mission for almost a decade, you know. And so now it's like I got to keep. Want to keep like scaling that now that we've taken some funding, and I want to, you know, realize what the mission should be, you know, bring it to life.
Yeah. Well, the reason I asked you about that is because I know that you've sat on the other side of the table, mm-hmm. to a lot of pitches,
yeah.
And you know, you're writing a book about trying to give people some advice. So what are some of the blunders or, you know, the things that you've witnessed, maybe a common one when people try to pitch? What is it like? Oh, no, don't do that.
Yeah, you know? I mean, so actually it's more about relationships and how to manage people is what I find is like. So first off, we go around the country. One of the biggest things that I see is that companies are not great at telling their own story. And so you have to think about it from like, let's say I'm an investor. And I don't, you know, I don't have a lot of time. I see a million pitches a day. And, you know, a million, but a lot of pitches, right? And so what are you going to do to get it to speak to me on my level and from my lens, right? Like that sort of make me care about what you're up to. And a lot of startup founders don't do that. They just rattle off what they do, and you're supposed to care so much about it. And you're really busy, and you're getting bombarded with a lot of pitches. So that I think that being able to tell your story and relate it with context to why I would care is super important. And then just in general relationships, like you just don't know, like, you know, you just don't know where things are going to end up with anybody, right? So even in the book, it kind of highlights some of that. So like my co-founder and original co-founder, Eric Olson, ended up, he was at Feedburner at the time and ended up getting acquired by Google. And then he was at BuzzFeed for a while. And now he's back an investor again. Well, the CEO of Feedburner at the time when he was coming out to our events was Dick Costolo. And now he's the CEO of Twitter. Like, people shift around and you just don't know where anyone's going to end up. So my biggest thing in relationships in general is in relationship management is making sure that, you know, you treat everyone with the same level of respect and because you just don't know where anyone's going to end up. You just, mm-hmm. I mean, they could be the president of the United States, you know, and you were a total jerk to them because you just thought that you were so cool or whatever. So I think it's super important to understand that coming in, like, treat everyone with respect and respect their ideas and what they're up to. And you just don't, you know, it's one of those things. And I think it should be a golden rule. And the relationships chapter, I think, is super important in this book because I read a book really early on. It was actually referenced by this guy named Robin Bradbury. He gave it to me. He said, "Listen, you should read this book." And it was Dale Carnegie's, "How to Win Friends and Influence People." And it's been out there for years, right? Almost 100 years old book. But yeah. The lessons in it are dead on, like on how to manage, you know, relationships and how to meet people and treat people. And one of the things is really look at things from other people's lenses. Like, try to put your head on their shoulders and mm-hmm. think, why would they care about me? And because ultimately most people care about one thing, and that's themselves.
Yeah.
So, you know, think about it from that perspective and you're going to get a lot further in life.
I'm going to give you one follow-up on that before we close. And that is, you mentioned twice, you know, you have to put yourself in the shoes of the person who mm-hmm. you're talking to. So yep. Specifically when you're presenting a pitch, what are the things that are you thinking about? Is it relationship or is it about numbers? You know, what do you care about as an investor or as a VC?
Yeah. Well, you got to do research on the person you're talking to, right? So look at their portfolio. There's so much data out there now about investors. Like, if you're going to talk to an investor, you can find out what they've invested in and you can understand like what they like based on that. Like, look at, like, do some research. Don't go in blind. Like, you need to figure out this person and what makes them tick. Because ultimately, you'll realize before you even talk to them if this is something they like. I mean, it's in most cases, you can figure it out based on their what they've invested in, what they're talking about maybe on their blog, what they're tweeting about, what they're posting out there. And, you know, the other thing, you know, and a lot of times it sounds bad, but a lot of investors like to invest in people that they think, you know, they'd like to grab a beer with kind of thing. So it's one of those things that you kind of need to figure it out, like who would be the perfect ideal investor for me based on what their likes and dislikes are, where they're already putting their money and how they're doing it, and then go from that direction. So, you know, I don't know if that totally answers your question, but I feel like a lot of people go in blind and don't have any idea about who they're talking to.
Yep.
And they blow it because they don't even take the time to freaking do some research and figure out what this person cares about.
Yeah, and I think also that, you know, by doing some of that research, you hook up with the people who are more, you know, likely to right. be to like you, and you like them. You know, not everybody is meant to work together. So,
right. So don't chase the ones that you know aren't going to make any sense just because they're really high profile and everyone's talking about it. Go after the folks that you think this will resonate with and will be your allies. And a lot of times, you know, it's not easy to find, but there's tools now. Like back in the day, 10 years ago, there weren't these tools. You had to like go to a classic VC, and now there's AngelList and some other sites like it that are out there that are, you know, helping people find investors, you know, and connect. And then now that there's something coming out soon, you know, the Jobs Act is going to enable crowdfunding. So there's going to be a lot more early stage capital out there with, you know, people that are investing, instead of investing in their 401ks, they're investing in startups, and the private market is really going to take off.
Right.
So I think that there's an opportunity for people to get early stage funding. I think there's going to be an interesting opportunity, obviously, for more investment early and then continue like along the way. But you're going to have to do your research.
Frank Gruber, thank you for joining me. The book is Startup Mixology, Tech Cocktails Guide to Building, Growing, and Celebrating Startup Success. Just out this week. Frank, where can people go? Obviously Amazon, but yeah. Where can they get some more information? You mentioned there were other chapters. Where do they go for that?
Yeah, sure. So it's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, pretty much any place you buy a book, you can find it. If you can even go to your independent local bookstore and ask them for it, and they'll probably have it. If they don't, have them order it. It definitely needs to be around. But the idea of getting it through us, you can actually get additional content. So if you go to startupmixology.tech.co, you can buy it through us. We'll, you know, send it to you. Plus, you'll basically get on our list to be able to get all the lost chapters, which there's a lot. Like as I mentioned, I overwrote the book. There's a lot of extra content. There'll also be some extra videos and other surprises that you'll get along the way. And, you know, from that way, you've got now an interaction or an opportunity to interact with us ongoing. And so, yeah, I think that's a good way to do it. But, you know, if you like Kindle and you want to get it on your Kindle or iBooks, you can do that too.
Okay, so if you're not live with us, you can visit our website at Dig Deep Grow to listen to the episode. Also, it'll be on iTunes, so you'll be able to get the links that Frank just mentioned on the show notes. So, Frank, thanks for joining me. It's been a really enlightening interview.
Well, thank you so much, Michael. I really appreciate it, and hopefully this is helpful for anybody that's listening, and I really appreciate you giving me the opportunity.
Perfect. Thanks for being with me.
Yep, thank you.